Chapter 21. Dead Weight. The last warriors of the 10th and 11th companies had gathered in the Echo of Damnation's war room. For 7 hours, none of them moved, all remaining around the Prophet and the War Sage. Occasionally, one of the warriors from the other claws would speak up, adding their recollections to those spoken by Talos. At last, Talos released a long, slow breath. "And then you awoke," he said. The dreadnought made a grinding sound deep within its innards, akin to a tank slipping gears. Talos wondered if that was the equivalent of a grunt or a curse, or simply clearing your throat when there was no longer a throat to speak of.
"You did well."
Talos almost flinched at the sudden proclamation.
"I see,"
he said, purely from a need to say something, anything at all.
"You seem surprised. Did you expect my anger?"
Talos was acutely aware of the others watching him.
"I had expected to kill you at best, or awaken you at worst. Your anger, either way, hadn't occurred to me."
Malkarion was the only thing in the room standing truly motionless. Though the others remained in place, they'd shift their posture from time to time, or tilt their heads, or share quiet words between claw kin. Malkarion was monumental in his stillness, never breathing, never moving at all.
"I should kill that accursed tech priest," he growled.
Across the chamber, Sirion chuckled. Convincing Malkarion not to annihilate Deltrian for the traumatic and agonizing resurrection had taken the two brothers some time. Deltrian, for his part, had been mortified, albeit in his subtle and unemotional way, at the failure of his resurrection rituals.
"But the Elder..."
Talos wasn't sure how to finish the sentence.
"With no officers... You've managed to keep us alive this long, Talos. Reclaiming the Echo was a fine gesture as well. The Eldar's trap is meaningless. The only way to avoid it would have been to continue existing on the fringes, accomplishing nothing, making no difference to the galaxy. How many worlds will have fallen dark from your psychic scream?"
He shook his head, unsure of the specifics.
"Dozens, perhaps 100. There is no way to know without accessing Imperial archives once the dust has settled on every afflicted world. Even then, we may never know." "That is more than Vandred ever did. Even if it wasn't done on the field of battle, do not be ashamed for fighting with your mind instead of your claws for a change. The Imperium knows something happened out here. You've sown the seeds of a subsector legend. The night 100 worlds fell dark, some will be silent for months. Some will be lost to warp storms for years. Some will never be heard from again. The Imperium will no doubt arrive to find them reefed clean of life by the demons loosed upon them. I confess, Talos, you are colder than I ever imagined to dream up such a fate."
Talos fought to turn the subject away from himself.
"You say the Imperium will know something happened here, but the Eldar already know. For them to have reacted as fast as they did, their witches must have peered into the future and seen something in the tides of alien prophecy."
The dreadnought moved for the first time, turning on its waste axis to look over the gathered Night Lords.
"And this troubles you?"
Several heads nodded, while other warriors replied with,
"Yes, Captain."
"I see what you are all thinking now."
The Night Lords looked back at their captain, incarnated in his hulking shell, a towering monument to a life lived in devoted service.
You do not wish to die. The Eldar herd us into a final fight, and you fear the call of the grave. You think only of escape, of living to fight another day, of preserving your lives at the cost of all else.
Lucoriphus hissed before speaking.
You make us sound craven!
Malkarion turned to the raptor, his armored joints grinding.
You have changed, Luke.
Time changes all things, Mal.
The raptor's head jerked to the side with a whine of servos.
We were the first on the walls at the Siege of Terra. We were the blades of the 11th before we were the bleeding eyes. And we are no cravens, Captain of the 10th.
You have forgotten the lesson of the Legion. Death is nothing compared to vindication.
The raptor gave a harsh croak, his equivalent of a laugh.
Death is still an ending I would rather avoid. Let us teach the lesson and live to teach it again another day.
The dreadnought gave a rumbling growl in response.
The lesson wasn't learned if you have to teach it twice. Now, stop whining. We'll face these aliens down before we worry about dying at the day's end.
It's good to have you back, Captain, said Sirion.
Then stop sniggering like an infant,
the dreadnought replied.
Tell us, what is your plan? It had better be grand, brother. I have no desire to die a third time in anything less than glory.
Several of the gathered legionaries shared a grim chuckle.
That was no joke,
Malkarion growled.
We didn't take it as one, Captain, said Mercutian.
The Prophet activated the tactical hololithic. A dense spread of asteroids filled the space above the projection table, densest in the void above a shattered sphere. At the heart of the cluster, a pulsing rune showed the echo of damnation.
We're safe for now, within the Sagwelsen asteroid field.
Malkarion made the gear-grinding sound again.
Why is the asteroid field so dense in this region? Even allowing for drift patterns, this is different to what I remember.
Lucoriphus gestured to the hololithic.
Talos shattered half of the moon.
Well, Sirion cleared his throat, perhaps a fifth of it. You have been busy, Soul Hunter.
How many times must I drag you back from the grave and tell you to stop calling me that?
Talos keyed in another set of coordinates. The hololithic shrank, zooming out to show Sagwelsa itself, and a host of other flickering runes ringing the world and its wounded moon.
The enemy fleet is gathering beyond the field's perimeters. They're holding off from coming in after us, and are refraining from attacking the several thousand souls we left alive on the planet itself. For now, they seem content to wait. But this is it. The noose has tightened. Each time we sought to run forward, they forced us back. They know we have no choice but to fight. Our backs are to the wall.
He looked around the war room, meeting the eyes of his last living brothers, the warriors of 10th and 11th companies, now grouped into four final claws.
You have a plan,
Malkarion rumbled. It wasn't a question this time. Talos nodded.
They've tightened the noose to force us into a fight, true enough. They have the firepower to annihilate the Echo of Damnation without a shadow of doubt. More of their vessels are arriving every hour. But we can still surprise them. They're expecting us to cut out of our hiding place and make a last stand in the void. I have a better idea.
Saguasa, one of the other Night Lords said. You can't be serious, brother. We stand a better chance in the void.
No,
Talos refocused the hololithic. We don't. And this is why. The flickering image resolved to show a spread of Saguelsa's polar region, and the jagged remnants of a structure that had once rivaled the sky with its towers. Several of the gathered legionaries shared quiet words, or shook their heads in disbelief.
Our fortress scarcely stands, Talos said. 10,000 years haven't been kind to the spires and battlements, but beneath the remains... The catacombs, Malkarion growled.
Exactly so, Captain.
Auspex scans show the catacombs are largely unchanged. They still reach 4 kilometers in every direction, with entire sections of the labyrinth immune to orbital bombardment. A fight on our terms. If the Eldar want us, they're welcome to come down into the dark. We'll hunt them as they hunt us.
How long can we last down there?
Lucorophus asked, his vox voice crackling.
Hours, days, everything depends on the force they deploy to chase us. Assuming they land an army and flood into the tunnels, we'll still bleed them more savagely than we could in a fair fight. Hours and days are both longer than lasting a handful of minutes. I know which one I'll choose.
The warriors were leaning forward now, hands resting on weapons. The atmosphere had turned, all reluctance filtering away. Talos continued, addressing the claws.
The Echo of Damnation is unlikely to survive even the brief run to the planet's atmosphere. Once we break from the densest region of the asteroid field, the Eldar will be on us like a second skin. Everyone who intends to survive must be ready to evacuate the ship.
And the crew? How many souls aboard?
We're not certain. 30,000 at least.
We cannot evacuate that many. Nor can we afford essential crew members leaving their stations. What will you tell them?
Nothing, replied Talos. They'll burn with the Echo.
I'll remain on the bridge until the last moments, so the command crew doesn't realize the Legion is abandoning them to die.
Cold.
Necessity. There's more. This is our final stand, and we damn ourselves if we hold anything back. First Claw will remain with me to arrange our final surprise for the Eldar. The rest of you will make planetfall via drop pods and thunderhawks as soon as you can. Lose yourself beneath Saguelsa's surface and be ready for what follows. Remember, even if we survive this, the Imperium is coming. They will find the survivors we left in Sanctuary and spread the story of our deeds. The Eldar care nothing for the populace. They're here for our blood.
Faltorm of the newly gathered Second Claw gave a wicked chuckle.
Suddenly, you're talking of survival. What are the odds of us actually surviving this, brother?
Talos's only reply was a singularly unpleasant smile. Hours later, the Prophet and the Flayer walked together through Varil's personal apothecarium. The facilities here were more specific in scope, with far fewer attendant slaves and servitors to get underfoot.
Do you realize, Varil asked, how much work you are asking me to simply cast aside?
Cast aside, thought Talos, and Malkarion calls me cold. That's why I've come to you, he said.
As he spoke, he ran his hand along the mechanical arm of a surgical machine, imagining it in motion, in sacred use.
Show me your work.
Varial led Talos to the holding chambers at the apothecarian's rear. Both warriors looked in, where the flayer's charges huddled in their bare cells, chained to the walls by collars around their throats.
They look cold, Talos noted.
They probably are. I keep them in aseptic containment.
Varial gestured at the first of the children. The boy was no older than 9, yet his flesh showed the ragged pink scars of recent invasive surgery along his chest, back, and throat.
How many do you have?
Varial didn't need to consult his Narthesium for exact figures.
61 between the ages of 8 and 15, adapting well to the various stages of implantation. A further 109 of harvestable age, yet not ripe for implantation. Over 200 have died so far.
Talos knew those kinds of figures well enough. Those are very good survival rates.
I know that. Varial almost sounded piqued. I am skilled at what I do.
That's why I need you to keep doing it.
Varial entered one of the cells, where one of the children lay on his front, unmoving. The flayer turned the boy over with the edge of his armored boot. Dead eyes stared back up.
213, he said,
and gestured for a servitor to drag the infant's body away.
Incinerate this, he ordered. Compliance?
Talos paid no heed to the servitor as it went about its funereal work.
Brother, listen to me for a moment.
I am listening.
Varial didn't stop keying in notes on his vambrace, recording yet more details.
You cannot stand with us on Saguelsa.
That made him stop. Varial's eyes, ice blue to Talos's black, lifted in a slow, sterile stare.
You tell a hilarious jest, the flayer said, utterly without warmth.
No jest, Varial. You are holding the key to a significant piece of the Legion's future. I'm sending you away before the battle. Deltrian's ship is capable of warp flight. You'll be going with him, as will your equipment and your work.
No.
This is not a debate, brother.
No!
Varial tore the flayed skin from his pauldron, revealing the winged skull beneath. The symbol of the 8th Legion stared back at Talos with hollow eye sockets.
I wear the winged skull of Nostramo, the same as you. I will fight and die with you on that worthless little world.
You owe me nothing, Varial. Not anymore.
For once, Varial looked close to stunned.
Owe you? Owe you? Is that how you see our brotherhood? A series of favors to be repaid. I owe you nothing. I will stand with you because we are both 8th Legion. Brothers, Talos. Brothers unto death.
Not this time.
You cannot!
I can do whatever I wish. Captain Malkarion agrees with me. There is no room on Deltrian's vessel for more than 10 additional warriors. And even that is better devoted to relics that must be returned to the Legion. You and your work must be preserved above all.
Varial took a breath. Have you ever realized how often you interrupt those you are speaking with? It is almost as irritating a habit as Uzes constantly licking his teeth.
I'll bear that in mind, Talos replied. I'll work on this alarming character flaw in the many years of life I have left. Now, will you be ready? If I give you 12 hours and as many servitors as you need, can you ensure your equipment is loaded aboard Deltrian's ship?
Varial bared his teeth in an uncharacteristic angry smile.
It will be done.
I have not seen you lose your temper since Frigga.
Frigga was an exceptional circumstance, as is this.
Varial pressed his fingertips to massage his closed eyes.
You are asking much of me.
Don't I always? And I need you to do something else, Varial.
The apothecary met the prophet's eyes again, sensing something disquieting in the other night lord's tone.
Ask.
Once you're gone, I want you to find Malek of the Atramentar.
Varial raised a thin eyebrow.
I am never returning to the Maelstrom, Talos. Huron will have my head.
I don't believe Malek will have remained there. Nor do I believe the Atramentar would willingly join with the Blood Reaver. If they boarded a Corsair vessel, it was for another reason. I don't know what that reason was, but I trust him despite what happened. Find him if you can, and tell him his plan worked. Malkarion lived. The War Sage resumed command, leading the Tenth again in its final nights.
Is that all?
No. Give him my thanks.
I will do all of that, if you wish. But Deltrian's ship will not get far without needing to refuel. It is too small for long-range flight. We both know this.
It doesn't have to get far, not at first. It just needs to get away from here.
Varial gave a grunt of displeasure.
The Eldar may chase us.
Yes, they may. Any other complaints? You're wasting what little time I can give you.
What of Octavia? How will we sail the Sea of Souls without a navigator?
You won't, Talos replied. That's why she's going with you.
He could have guessed her reaction would be somewhat less polite than Vario's. Had he bothered to predict such a thing, he'd have been quite correct.
I think, she said, I'm sick and tired of doing what you tell me.
Talos wasn't looking directly at her. He walked around her throne, casting his gaze across the fluid pool, remembering the chamber's previous occupant. She'd died in filth, broken apart by the bolters of First Claw. Despite a memory that bordered on eidetic, Talos found he couldn't recall the creature's name now.
How rare.
Are you listening to me?
Octavia asked, the tone of her voice so exquisitely courtly drew his attention back.
Yes.
Good.
She sat in her throne, one hand cradling her swelling stomach. Her near emaciation made the pregnancy all the more prominent.
What are the chances that Deltrian's ship will even make it to safety?
Talos saw no sense in lying to her. He looked at her long and hard, letting the seconds pass by to the rhythm of her heartbeat.
Your chance of survival is almost amusingly small, but a chance, nevertheless.
And Septimus?
He is our pilot and my slave.
He's the father of...
Talos held up a hand in warning.
Be careful, Octavia. Do not mistake me for a being able to be moved by emotional pleas. I have skinned children before their parents' eyes, you know.
Octavia clenched her teeth.
So he's staying.
She wasn't sure why she said it, but it came out in a spill nevertheless.
He'll follow me somehow. You can't keep him here. I know him better than you do.
I have not yet decided his fate, Talos replied.
And what about you? What's your fate?
Do not speak to me in that tone of voice. This is not the Imperial Court of Terra, Little Highness. I am not impressed or awed by a haughty tone. So save your breath.
Sorry, she said. I'm just angry.
Understandable. So what will you do? You're just going to let them kill you?
Of course not. You saw what happened when we tried to run. How we battered our prow against blockade after blockade. They won't let us run to the Great Eye. The noose started to close around us the moment I let out the psychic scream. We make our stand here, Octavia. If we leave it any longer, we'll lose our last chance to choose where this war will be fought.
You're not answering my question.
We're going to die.
Talos gestured to her bank of wall monitors, each one showing a different angle outside the ship, each one an eye staring upon the millions of rocks drifting in the void.
How can I be clearer? How can it be more obvious? Outside this asteroid field, alien warships wait for us to make our move. We're dead, Octavia. That's all there is to it. Now, ensure you are ready to leave the ship. Take whatever you wish. It matters nothing to me. You have 11 hours before I never want to see you again.
He turned and left, shoving aside two of her attendants that didn't scatter quickly enough. She watched him walk away, tasting freedom on her tongue for the first time since she was captured, and unsure whether the taste was as pleasant as she remembered. The door opened with smooth traction, revealing his master in the entrance arch. Septimus looked up, Uzas's helm still in his hands. He had been making the final repairs to the left eye lens socket.
Lord, he said.
Talos walked in, filling the humble chamber with a chorus of snarling joints and the ever-present hum of live armor.
Octavia leaves the ship in 11 hours, the Night Lord said. Your unborn child goes with her.
Septimus nodded. His eyes never left his master's faceplate.
With respect, Lord, I had already guessed.
Talos walked around the room, casting his attention here and there, never lingering for long on one thing. He took in the half-repaired pistols on the desk, the sketches of schematics, the charcoal drawings of his lover, Octavia, and the clothing left in messy heaps. Above all, the small space bled a sense of life, of personality, of being the sanctum of one specific living soul.
A human's room,
Talos thought, reflecting on the empty lifelessness of his own personal chambers. Chambers resembling the quarters of any other legionary, except for the prophecies scrawled on the iron walls.
How different they are to us, to leave their imprints so sternly on the places they live.
He turned back to Septimus, the man that had served him for almost a decade now.
We must speak, you and I.
As you wish, Master.
Septimus put the helm down.
No. For the next few minutes, we will forget the roles of those who serve and those who are served. For now, I am neither Master nor Lord. I am Talos.
The warrior removed his helm, looking down with his pale features calm. Septimus felt the mad urge to reach for a weapon, unnerved by this strange familiarity.
Why do I feel like this is some frightening prelude to slitting my throat? He asked.
The prophet's smile never reached his dark eyes. Octavia and Deltrian weren't getting along, which was a surprise to neither of them. She thought he was unbearably impatient for such an augmented creature, and he thought she smelled unpleasantly of the biological chemicals and organic fluids involved in mammalian reproduction. Their relationship had started with those first impressions and gone downhill from there. It was a relief for both of them when she went to her quarters for her final preparations before flight. She strapped herself into the uncomfortable throne in the belly of Deltrian's squat insectoid ship. Her chamber, such as it was, offered a single picture screen and barely enough room to stretch her legs.
"Has anyone ever sat here and tested this equipment?" she asked, as a servitor slid a slender neural spike into the modest and elegantly crafted socket at her temple.
"Ouch! Careful with that!"
"Compliance," murmured the cyborg, staring with dead eyes. It was all the answer she received, which didn't surprise her either.
"You push until it clicks," she told the lobotomized slave. "Not until it comes out my other bloody ear."
The servitor drooled a little. "Compliance?"
"Throne, just go away."
"Compliance," it said for a third time, and did exactly that. She heard it bumping into something in the corridor outside, while the ship shook on the deck with final armament loading. Octavia's box of a room had no porthole windows, so she cycled through the external picture feeds. Image after image of the Echo's main hangar deck flickered across the screen. Thunderhawks were being loaded with full payloads, and drop pods were winched into position. Octavia watched with emotionless eyes, not sure what to feel. Was this home? Would she miss all of it? Where would they even go, if they managed to get away?
"Oh," she whispered, watching the screen. "Oh, shit."
She paused the scrolling feed, keying in a code to tilt one of the image finders on the ship's hull. Loader buggies and crew transports ferried back and forth. A lifter sentinel, stolen from some long-past raid, clanked its way past, steel feet thumping on the deck. Septimus, with a beaten leather bag over one shoulder, was speaking with Deltrian by the main gang ramp. His long hair covered his facial augmetics, and he wore a subtly armored bodysuit beneath his heavy jacket. A machete was sheathed at his right shin, and both pistols hung low at his hips. She had no idea what he was saying. The external viewfinders didn't offer sound. She watched him slap Deltrian on the shoulder, which the stick-thin cadaver of chrome didn't seem to appreciate, if his recall was anything to go by. Septimus made his way up the gang ramp and vanished from view. The screen showed Deltrian returned to directing his loader servitors and the endless flow of machinery being brought aboard. She heard the knock at her bulkhead door almost immediately after.
"Tell me you've got your bandana on," she heard him call through the metal.
She smiled, reaching a hand to check just in case.
"You're safe,"
the door opened, and he dumped his gear the moment he'd closed it behind him.
"I was dismissed from service," he said, "just like you." "Who'll fly Blackened down to the surface?"
"No one. There are only enough squads for 3 gunships. Blackened has been loaded into this ship's conveyance clause already. Talos has bequeathed it to Variel, full of his apothecarian equipment and relics from the Hall of Reflection. It's to be returned to the Legion in the Eye, if we ever make it that far." Her smile faded, the sun going behind the horizon.
"We're not going to make it that far. You know that, don't you?"
He shrugged, evidently sanguine.
"We'll see."
Word had surely spread throughout the ship of the upcoming battle, but the Echo was a city in space, with all the various multitudes such scope implied. On the highest crew decks, the battle to come was a matter of focus. The officers and ratings knew their parts to play and went about their duties with all the professionalism of those aboard an Imperial Navy warship. On the lower decks, as one ventured deeper into the ship's innards, the battle was either a matter of prayer, ignorance, or helpless muttering. The thousands who fed the ship with their blood and sweat, toiling in the reactor chambers and the weapon battery platforms, had no wider understanding of the situation, beyond the fact a battle would soon be fought. Talos went alone to the primary hangar deck. 10th Company's surviving warriors were already on board their drop pods, while their Thunderhawks were loaded with war gear, to be ferried down to them on the surface. Servitors stood in idle silence here and there, waiting for the next order that would engage their limited response arrays. The Prophet crossed the quiet landing bay to where Deltrian was descending down his ship's gang ramp.
"All is in readiness," Deltrian vocalized.
Talos regarded the adept with unblinking red eye lenses.
"Swear to me, you'll do as I say. Those three sarcophagi are priceless. Malkarion will stand with us, but the other three tomb pods have to reach the Legion. They are relics beyond price. They cannot die here with us."
"All is in readiness," Deltrian said a second time.
"The gene seed matters most of all," Talos pressed him. "The gene seed supplies in storage must reach the Eye at all costs. Swear to me."
"All is in readiness," Deltrian repeated.
He had scant regard for the swearing of oaths. In his view, promises were something sworn by biologicals seeking to use hope in place of calculated likelihood. In short, an agreement made on flawed parameters.
"Swear to me, Deltrian."
The tech priest made an error sound, vocalizing it in a low burr.
"Very well. In an effort to end this vocalization exchange, I give my oath that the plan will be followed to precise parameters, to the best of my ability and capacity to oversee the efforts of others."
"That'll do."
Deltrian wasn't quite finished.
"Estimates suggest we will remain in the asteroid field for several hours after your departure before we know for certain if every Xenos vessel is giving chase. Auspex's unreliability is a factor. Drift jamming is a factor. Alien interference is a factor. The logistics of..."
"There are many factors," Talos interrupted. "I understand. Hide as long as you need to, and run when you can."
"As you will it, so shall it be."
The tech priest turned, then hesitated. Talos wasn't moving away.
"Do you linger here in the desire that I will wish you luck?"
Deltrian tilted his leering skull of a face.
"You must be aware that the very idea of fortune is anathema to me. Existence is arbitrary, Talos."
The Night Lord held out his hand. Deltrian's eye lenses focused on the offered gauntlet for a moment, soft whirrings in his facial structure giving away the fact his eyes were refocusing.
"Intriguing," he said. "Processing."
A moment later, he gripped the Legionary's wrist. Talos gripped the Adept's, returning the Eighth Legion's traditional warrior handshake.
"It's been a privilege, honored Adept."
Deltrian searched for the appropriate response. He was an outsider, but the ancient formal words, traditionally spoken between warriors of the Eighth Legion on the eve of hopeless battles, came to him with an alacrity he found surprising.
"Die as you lived, son of the Eighth Legion, in midnight clad."
The two broke apart. Deltrian, as dead to patience as he was to subtlety, immediately turned and walked up the gang ramp, heading into the ship. Talos hesitated, seeing Septimus at the top of the ramp. The slave raised his gloved hand in farewell. Talos snorted at the gesture.
"Humans. The things emotion forces them to do."
He acknowledged his former slave with a nod and left the hangar without a word.